On our latest episode, we have a spoiler-free review of Avengers Infinity War. Does Venom still have some sting? And has Westworld achieved Game of Thrones status? All this and more as we reach our next stop, the PCC Multiverse.
Don't be alarmed. The quasi-shimmering light before you is a trans-dimensional gateway to other worlds, other voices, other thoughts, and other realities. Up feels like down, and down feels like the number 7 on a Wednesday morning. Don't worry. That quivering, blood-boiling sensation under your eyebrows is all a part of the charm. Welcome to the PCC Multiverse.
And we are back once again with the PCC Multiverse. This is Gerald Glassford from Pop Culture Cosmos and Game Source. We truly thank you for tuning back in to another great episode that we have for you today. And it wouldn't be a PCC Multiverse without my good friend. He is the man, the myth, the legend behind Humanica Media. You gotta check out all the great stuff that's going on there at humanicamedia.com or their YouTube channel, Apple Podcasts, Podbean, or their dozens of podcast channels. It's my good friend. It's the man who actually saw Avengers Infinity War. It's Josh Peterson. How'd that indie flick go, man?
That was very good. It's just a small
book. Wait. That's for the back end, my friend. You gotta wait for that one.
Yeah, for that question.
I know. That's the kind of little put in that little surprise value there. But we are going to definitely talk about Avengers Infinity War. We're devoting the entire back half of the episode to Avengers Infinity War, a spoiler-free review with Josh's thoughts on the movie itself. But first, we're going to be talking about Venom, Westworld, and also Rob McCallum and Jay Bartlett stopped by to talk Solo and their great Star Wars-related project, which you can support right now on Kickstarter. And if you want to go ahead and check out a further detailed thoughts on from both of them, we have a special Pop Culture Cosmos episode that just launched the other day right on our Pop Culture Cosmos channels on over 30 different podcast networks. Josh, first though, I know you got the chance to see Venom, the new trailer that came out for the movie that's upcoming by Sony that's dealing in the Spider-Verse and all that. Share me your thoughts on Venom, because my goodness, I've got some thoughts that I really want to lay into when it comes to Venom, the movie. But you first, my friend.
I'm not excited. I wasn't excited during the first trailer, and I'm not excited during this one. And seeing the whole thing come together did not, like, with the teeth and all that, and the tongue and all that, it doesn't look the way that I had expected it to look. In the comic books, they do Agent Venom, and he has his black suit, and he has like a black Spider-Man suit, and he's got like Punisher gear. That's cool. That would translate well into a real life scenario. But this is like the 1990s cartoon Venom. I'm not a huge fan, and it's not even that. It's also the fact that, like, it looks completely over the top. Like, I don't know what they're trying to do. Like, it looks very, like, gimmicky. Like, he's, you know, the part with the motorcycle, and he shoots the thing out of his chest and pulls the motorcycle back to him. Like, that's like the transporter. It looks like this is going to be the transporter of comic book movies. And then that whole thing in the beginning where they have to say in association with Marvel films, like, what does that mean? Because if Tom Holland's going to have a cameo in this film, where does this, you know, where does this stand? And it honestly looks like they're going to do an even worse job with this movie than they did with the Amazing Spider-Man franchise. And I actually liked the Amazing Spider-Man franchise. So I don't know, man. I'm not excited. It doesn't look like that great of a movie. And I know a lot of people are excited about it, but I think it's going to be, they're going to go to the theaters, you know, in October and find disappointment.
I know I would if I'm going to go see it, but right now I'm not enthused at all in seeing it. In the few scenes that I saw him as a reporter, him being Tom Hardy, who's playing the lead character in this movie, totally looked unbelievable as far as that role, as far as the intrepid reporter, so to speak, as far as, you know, the investigative reporter and all that. It looked totally staged, totally fake, and I just really just disappointed so far from what I've seen. And then the special effects, I just wasn't really impressed by it either. And the, when it finally came up to the CGI of becoming the full-blown Venom outfit and whatnot, well, I'll just say if you search out Elizabeth Banks and her Twitter account, I think that probably says it best, but it's unfortunately NSFW, so I don't really want to comment any further on that other than saying it was just not the best CGI in the world. So I'm not exactly really enthused by it. This could be a huge misfire for Sony and the Spider-Verse as far as them trying to go ahead and expand the Spider-Man universe. This could be a serious misstep. Again, I just think it comes down to Tom Hardy being miscast in this type of role. What are your thoughts on Tom Hardy so far? Because I'm really not impressed from what I saw.
I think they're trying to get him to play something outside of his depth. Eddie Brock is a very shallow character. There's not any layers to him. He's a, you know, he's a reporter, and then he's got anger issues, and that's really that's it. There's nothing really, you know, tragic about him. There's some stuff in the comic books, you know, he has to fight his girlfriend and stuff like that, but that there's no like backstory that makes him interesting. You know, he doesn't have a tragedy behind him. There's nothing like that, and Tom Hardy has far too many acting chops. He's far too good at acting to be portraying a part like this. If they were to give him more depth, make him like a more, I don't want to say Bane like the whole Brooklyn accent, it doesn't work. I don't believe it. And I don't know, man. Like I love Tom Hardy, but I don't think that this role's for him. But like even more so than Tom Hardy is the guy that plays the villain. Like he sounds like a spoiled child. He's not intimidating. He just sounds like a high school kid who's out there spending his dad's money. And that's the villain is just not scary to me either. So I don't know, man.
Well, it's supposed to be the anti-hero, and that flashes on the screen when you're watching the trailer, but to me it's like the anti-superhero movie, and it's not really about heroes and villains in this case. It's just the shades of gray, and we've seen movies that have delicately balanced that line and done it very well with morally gray heroes and villains and whatnot, basically bordering the line, but still being able to pull off a great comic book or superhero adaptation. In this case, it just seems like there's nothing interesting about any of these characters. And all of them, not just Tom Hardy, looks like their character is very angry in it. And it's every single character does not have a fulfilling purpose in the movie, and they all seem to have anger issues. Then really there's just nowhere for the audience to go or to sympathize with or to really get behind or root behind when it comes to a main character, supporting character, what have you. So I just really don't think at this point in time I see much that impresses me when it comes to Venom. And that's going to be a disappointment for Sony, which goes right back to where it started again after the success of Spider-Man Homecoming.
Well, to get the Spider-Verse going, you need a Spider-Man. So Sony needs to just work with Marvel. I know they got this contract going for Spider-Man in the MCU, but they need to work with Marvel. You know, they need to hammer out a fluent future for the character. And this is what I've always said. If you use Carnage, you'd have to have it would be a very dark movie. You'd have to have an R rating, but it would make so much money. It would just make a disgusting amount of money because Carnage is the holy grail of Spider-Man villains. And that's the one that everybody wants to see. Growing up, every kid wanted to see Carnage in the comic books, in the cartoons, whatever it was. People wanted to see Carnage. And something big like that could potentially create interest in a Spider-Verse separate of...
What about Miles Morales? What if he made an entry instead of what we've seen from Tom Holland's Spider-Man character?
I don't know. It seems like there'd be too much going on at once. I think the MCU would need to introduce a Miles Morales Spider-Man because he's a little like less tragic than Peter Parker is. Like Peter Parker can exist in a dark Spider-Man universe, but I don't think Miles Morales could. Miles Morales is like he's sad, but he doesn't have the tragedies that Peter Parker that makes Peter Parker such an interesting character.
It looks like that's going to be the case, that they're going to have to throw something in there though that's going to make Venom more interesting, because right now what they have is not a whole lot. And like you said, if Carnage isn't going to be a part of this film, then from all aspects, it doesn't look like this is going to be a winner at this point. Although things can change, and hopefully they'll show themselves better in the coming months, because like you said, it's coming out in October and not a lot of people are going to be excited for it if you're going off of these first two trailers. What are your thoughts on Venom? Are you excited for it, or are you not so like us? Share us your thoughts, popculturecosmos@yahoo.com. Also as well, Pop Culture Cosmos, Humanica Media, and Game Source on Facebook and Twitter as well. Josh, I also wanted to touch on real quick, Westworld is back up and running on HBO. It actually garnered a lot of attention as the number two show behind Game of Thrones. I want to ask you real quick your thoughts on Westworld, and do you think it can capture, or has it already captured the attention and magic now that Game of Thrones is on a, well, extended hiatus?
You know, I still got to watch the show. Like, I've heard great things about it. I haven't had a chance to watch any of it yet, but it's something I want to watch on a day where I can just watch them all. You know, it's based on the Michael Crichton books, but yeah, it looks good, man. Like, it has the drama, it has the appeal, it has all the things that made me want to go watch Game of Thrones after seeing the trailers. It's something that it's still fresh, it's still new, people still like it, and so it could be what carries on after Game of Thrones ends. Have you seen any of it?
I have seen it. I am caught up to date with it. I have seen the first episode from this season, and I did see the entire season last year. It is, at this point in time, off to a pretty good start, what I've seen so far, obviously leading from the events from last year, and I won't spoil it for you if you're going to go ahead and binge it. I will tell you, for me, though, that first season was very uneven. There were some really, really good performances and really good episodes, and there were some that they just dragged and just basically could not really keep up with the excellent episodes that were there. So for me, it was a little bit uneven, but it ended pretty good. And it actually, on this season, started okay with trying to go ahead and unravel exactly the carnage and trying to trace back what happened the past since the ending of season one. So trying to unravel a mystery at this point in time, which is kind of cool, but it's still about the androids versus the humans, and that's what it ultimately breaks down to. So seeing that from that perspective is still kind of interesting to me, and seeing how these stories develop out in this glorified version of a theme park, it still actually has some very good moments, and I do give it a passing grade. Like I said, it is very uneven for me in the first season, but there are still some good times as far as that's concerned. It hasn't achieved for me the excellence of Game of Thrones, because when Game of Thrones hits a high, I don't think Westworld quite reaches that as of yet. There is shock value in the Westworld. There is a lot of adult content. There is a lot of mature content that's notwithstanding. It's an HBO series. Of course, it's going to do all that type of stuff. But I will say it doesn't quite match up yet to Game of Thrones, but that's not saying it won't down the line. So I will continue to watch the series as well and see if it does match up to what Game of Thrones has to offer, or what Game of Thrones has offered fans all across the world for so many years already, and will only do so for a limited time run. What are your thoughts on Westworld? Are you really enthused about the series? Are you back for season two? Is it matching your expectations? Or do you think it's something that's not quite yet in that Game of Thrones threshold that so many people love so much? Share us your thoughts, popculturecosmos@yahoo.com. Also as well, Humanica Media, Game Source, and Pop Culture Cosmos on Facebook and Twitter as well. Josh, before we head on over to talk to Jay and Rob after the break, fill us in on what's going on with your great site known as Humanica Media.
Oh, just so much, Gerald Glassford. Thank you for asking. All three of our Marvel phase reviews are up there, so you can check that out on Topicocalypse. And Super BS just dropped a Tides of Numenera episode. So if you're a fan of the holiday episode of Super BS, we jump back into the world of Numenera to play a campaign created by Eric. So if you're into that, if you like Dungeons and Dragons type podcasts, that's definitely something you might want to check out. And then Charles is pumping content out like crazy on the Inside Sports podcast. There's stuff for hockey fans, stuff for football fans, and I'm sure there's stuff fans of people who like to listen to other people talk about things.
Check out everything you see there at humanicamedia.com. Also as well, all those shows, Inside Sports, What About This, Super BS Gamescast, and Topicocalypse on Podbean as well, and so many other different outlets. Like I said, coming up after the break, we've got Rob McCallum and Jay Bartlett talking to us about their great project, Galaxy Hope, which you could now help support on Kickstarter. And they're also going to talk a little bit about Solo upcoming as well. So definitely I want to hear their thoughts on both that and their upcoming project. This is the PCC Multiverse. For the latest reviews and opinions on everything pop culture, head on over to our brand new site, www.popculturecosmos.wordpress.com. It's been 3 years since we last saw these two on screen together in the hit documentary Nintendo Quest, but the guys are back, and with your help on Kickstarter, they can make film magic once again with Galaxy of Hope. This is Gerald Glassford from Pop Culture Cosmos and GameSource. We truly appreciate you joining us. It is, again, the Galaxy of Hope project that is now out on Kickstarter. You can contribute to it today on Kickstarter. Just look for Galaxy of Hope. And I'll tell you what, I'm just so excited that these guys are back again making film together once again. In fact, I just always love it when these two are together because it always creates for a great time. It's my good friends, the stars of Nintendo Quest, Jay Bartlett, and director Rob McCallum. But while we're here, you know, guys, I've got to slip in some pop culture topics for you. And I know I've talked to Jay in the past in regards to the upcoming Solo film. Rob, I know that's something we wanted to touch on last week in the Cosmic Crossfire that you can hear pretty much every episode of the Pop Culture Cosmos and the PCC Multiverse when it drops each week. But I know we didn't get a chance to. So your thoughts on the upcoming Solo project or Solo movie, I'm sorry.
Well, I think the tale of the film might be more interesting than the film itself, for better or worse. The letting go of directors, the holdback of a poster, the almost last minute reveal of two trailers within the last 3 months. It really leads one to suspect that something is going on with this production because they're handling it completely different than any other Star Wars film. So color me intrigued, Gerald. But I think there's a lot to glean from this one once the dust finally settles in the projection room.
Well, I tell you what, I hope it's going to be a great film. I'm excited for it.
I hope it is, too.
I hope it is as well. Jay, I know you and I spoke before about it, but hearing Rob's thoughts, did you want to go ahead and maybe chime in with your own opinions on this upcoming Solo film?
Actually, he was a lot lighter on it than I thought he was going to be, so that's good. I mean, I can't imagine being Ron Howard coming in and having to clean up that mess. One of the early test screenings that Kathleen Kennedy saw, you know, that's when I can't even remember their names. The two guys got fired because she said that
Behind the Lego movie.
The Han Solo was a lot like Jim Carrey. Like, there was a lot of slapsticky one-liners. And when I read that, I was like, oh my God, what are they doing? So, you know, God bless Ron Howard. He has to come in there, clean it up, use the footage that they had, I guess, that was usable and kind of write new parts to it. I'm more and more excited as it goes on. And I really like the change in marketing that Disney has done for Solo. It's now an undersaturation where The Last Jedi and The Force Awakens and Rogue One, the merch, the trailers were released, you know, 4 months before. Now you're having the opposite where I think it's really putting more value to the Han Solo film. You can't get hardly any of the stuff anywhere. It's in lower quantities, and you know that's a fact. The poster being released late, like Rob said, and you know, you're getting the TV spots every single day now, different versions of them. But I like it. It builds up the excitement more instead of seeing something and you're like, okay, well, we have 8 more months to go before we can see it. Now it's like, you know, only a couple months away.
Jordan Morris has chimed in via text message once more. He says he hopes it's great, but his expectations are so low.
Oh my goodness, that's something special.
Quite a boom.
I read, and I don't know how credible the source was. I can't remember, but I heard that Alden, whatever his last name is, got signed for 3 more Star Wars films. I read that this morning.
Well, let's hope it's going to be a great film. I'm excited for it because Han Solo is my favorite Star Wars character.
Yes.
One thing I want to ask you, is that something you guys will be targeting in Galaxy of Hope, which, again, you guys can back today on Kickstarter. Just look for Galaxy of Hope on Kickstarter, and you can go ahead and back this great upcoming film project today. Jay or Rob, is this something that maybe you're going to target as far as artifacts, collectibles that maybe are from Solo or from the last couple of Star Wars films?
Well, I got to tell you, I mean, it's not a coincidence that we've launched our campaign today. It gives us a little over a week to May the 4th, and our campaign ends a week after Solo premiere. So we are definitely hoping to ride the wave of Star Wars in the news for the next month or so. It's going to be a hot topic everywhere. And if the film underperforms, then we can say, well, check out, a Star Wars documentary that is great. Back us today. Or, you like this film, then you'll like this one too. Back in as well. Get crazy.
Well, definitely it is something to look forward to as far as all the great things that you guys are going to go ahead and collecting. Is there any one thing, Jay, that you hope will that might come across your way as far as from a certain film or from a certain aspect, from a certain scene or a certain type of collectible that you hope maybe that's something that you can get your hands on as far as to go ahead and contribute towards the auction?
All I will say at this point is I think I've come across one of them already. I'll leave it at that.
I foresee Jay following in the footsteps of one of his favorite characters, Kylo Ren, and trying to hunt down a Vader helmet and put it on display or kind of have that as a nice showpiece. That would be cool because of that synergy that Jay has for that character. He's a character that Jay dresses up as when they do some cosplay events with Echo 3 Group, of course. So I really like that idea of trying to hunt down the remains of Vader to include in the auction.
One of the things I want to talk about with Star Wars Echo 3 is actually, Jay, I know you've mentioned it with us when you've appeared on our show, the Pop Culture Cosmos and the PCC Multiverse. But I know for a fact that not a lot of people out there know as much about Star Wars Echo 3 as maybe you want them to know. So tell everyone out there your opportunity with Star Wars Echo 3, because obviously your work with that group has obviously led to something bigger with the Galaxy of Hope.
Yeah, Echo 3 was my, I should say Echo 3 is my Star Wars fan group that I formed just a few years ago. Just basically, I needed something different. We just came off the Power Tour. The Force Awakens was just gearing up as we were finishing the Power Tour, actually. And I've probably told this story on your show before, but I really identified with Kylo Ren, and I didn't know why, because you only saw the backside of him in the first trailer, didn't know anything about the character. But Rob can attest, I had the Force Awakens Kylo Ren figure that I took with me across the country as kind of my, like, guardian. And
oh, how cute.
Yeah, yeah. And I had a friend of mine, Amber, that was she's just a wonderful cosplayer, and her and I did some shots in the forest to kind of recreate Ren and Rey. And it snowballed from there. We met some really great people and made a conscious decision that we love all Star Wars. We love all Star Wars groups. We didn't want this divide, very much like Nintendo Quest. We accept everybody. So we kind of formed our own group, and it just went on from there. Did a bunch of events, Blu-ray releases, mall appearances, things like that. But again, it goes back to the Children's Hospital that day and how the direction changed. And if I may really quickly, a fan reached out to me today. We're actually going to a hospital a few hours away in Hamilton on May 4th because the mother of this child named Xavier contacted us in January. Xavier passed away. He was 9 or 10 years old, and he was very, very sick. But he lived basically in the hospital for the last couple years of his life, and he had all these treatments, numerous treatments, weekly, monthly. All he wanted to do, this boy, was to get better so that he could get out of his hospital bed and put on his Kylo Ren or Darth Vader outfit to go visit the other kids. So she contacted me this morning and she's like, you know, I can't wait to see you guys May 4th. And I just saw the trailer for Galaxy Hope and I actually, you know, I lost it. Like I just broke down in tears and she wanted us to know, Rob, that Xavier's with us.
Those are the human stories that I'm talking about. That's the power of a film like this. That's the power of what we're trying to do. Yeah, we're trying to get a documentary funded so that we can film all this stuff. But when that film is done, it gets to go out there and inspire other people to do similar things and to think about things in a different way. And you can't manufacture that. It's you can't do this. And once you get a taste for helping others, especially through the thing that you love and the thing that they love, when you have that common bond, it's almost like nothing else matters. And I'll tell you right now, it puts a lot of crap into perspective. You know, we complain about the weather or our phone is old or it doesn't work or, you know, we can't watch the latest sports game or whatever the thing is. We complain about a lot of petty crap. And then you start working with people and fans that have truly limited scopes of life by comparison. And when you can just spend time with them, not even do anything, just spend time with them and talk to them about something like Star Wars, it brightens up their day. And that's what this documentary will do. Film is forever. And that's why we want to get funded on Kickstarter. So go to Kickstarter, look for Galaxy of Hope, help us fund this documentary so we can document Jay's journey and his quest to get all these toys, memorabilia, and seek out these celebs and people that worked in front of the camera and behind the camera to get them a part of this once in a lifetime auction where all the proceeds go to help the Children's Health Foundation.
So if you are a collector, if you're a cosplayer with an interesting story, these are all segments we're looking to feature as well. So it's not just me collecting and going out there. It's again, like Rob said, very much in the vein of Nintendo Quest. We want to feature the collectors. We want to feature the people who dress up, who aren't necessarily in Echo 3, who do what we do to help people. We want to feature them. So please reach out to me, reach out to Rob. If you guys have a good story, if you got a great collection that you want to showcase, yeah, drop us a line, please. Absolutely.
And if you go on our Kickstarter page, you'll see on the bottom right underneath the rewards, there is a chance for you to reach out and message us directly. You can go there. You can see that we've got three things listed out there. Do you have a podcast? Do you have a website where you'd like to interview us or talk to us like we are now? Send us a message. Do you know anybody that has worked on the Star Wars films or in the films in any capacity? Send us a message. Do you have an incredible piece of Star Wars memorabilia or merchandise that you would like in the auction and or that we could possibly film in the documentary? Send us a message. I do want to give a couple shout outs to some good friends of ours who have recently become backers. Shout out to Ryan Bates, Tim Wendell, and Steve Schwarzentruber, our latest backers of Galaxy of Hope here. We're making a dent now in our campaign goal, and we're doing it. We're doing it, man.
Once again, it is Galaxy of Hope. You can help make this happen today on Kickstarter. Just go ahead and search out on Kickstarter.com. Rob, Jay, it's been a great pleasure having you on as the special edition of the Cosmic Crossfire, the Pop Culture Cosmos, and the PCC Multiverse. Check us out. We're streaming online every single day on online radio and also as well twice a week available on over 30 different podcast networks. If you get a chance, you'll hear more updates on this project. You'll hear more thoughts from Rob and hopefully Jay as well as we continue this Kickstarter. As it nears the finality of it, we'll also go live as well to go ahead and hopefully thank everyone for hopefully fully funding this project. So guys, thanks again. I appreciate it. Rob and Jay, just truly great to have you aboard. That is, again, Jay Bartlett and Rob McCallum. They're hopefully going to be able to be working on this great project. It is Galaxy Hope, now live on Kickstarter. If you remember how great Nintendo Quest was, Missing Mom, Kitty, Origins and Evolution, and also the upcoming Power Grayskull, if you know how great these projects have been, look out, because here's another great one on the way. Guys, it's just been a great pleasure having you both on this special edition of the Pop Culture Cosmos, and my best to you, and hope that this project gets funded. And guys, it's been great having you part of the Pop Culture Cosmos.
Hi, my name's Ian.
And I'm Chris.
And we host a podcast called Dadcast Unknown,
where every 2 weeks we talk about being a dad and being a nerd and sometimes being a nerdy dad at the same time. We'll talk about everything from movies to comics.
Find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes at Dadcast Unknown, and also on any of your most popular podcatcher apps.
Join us, laugh with us, make fun of us. As long as you're listening, we don't care.
That's a good way to end it.
And we're back once again with the PCC Multiverse. This is Gerald Glassman from Pop Culture Cosmos and Game Source. We truly appreciate you sticking around and enjoying the show. And we will leave you no further in suspense. We're dedicating this last half hour to Avengers Infinity War. Josh has seen it. I am on pins and needles, want to hearing his thoughts on it. And definitely want to know exactly, A, if it's a good movie to watch, and also exactly some general parameters around it, because we're going to try and keep it as spoiler-free as possible without ruining it for anyone out there, because we know this drops Friday originally to our podcast network. So definitely want to go ahead and make sure we try and keep it as spoiler-free as possible. But we got to hear your thoughts, Josh, on it. So first off, go ahead and just give us some general thoughts, and then we'll go ahead and break it down a little bit more on Avengers Infinity War.
It was a good movie. It was everything that I thought it would be and more. And the Russos did a great job of throwing a lot of misdirect in. There's some stuff like in the trailers that everyone kept on like making assumptions about, and it was kind of like a red herring, because it... Once the movie, you see it in the movie, you see that they did such a clever job with editing the trailer that none of the stuff that we're all guessing about seems to happen.
Overall, as far as you said the movie and they throw a lot of red herrings at you and they throw a lot of diversions at you, is there too many diversions? Does that become a problem as far as the movie is concerned, or is it still entertaining? Because we've seen films that just keep constantly throwing surprises and diversions at us. And we just go ahead and basically just, you know, after a while, just become numb to it. Does that happen at all?
No, not really. This is the one thing that I will give high praise to the movie for. I mean, there's a lot I'll give high praise to the movie for, but they did a good job of giving every character enough screen time without making it feel like they were rushing through it. And the movie literally picks up right after the events of Ragnarok. So you don't even, you don't have to worry about those gaps. And they even go out of their way to close certain story arcs from Ragnarok, from Civil War, all the stuff that they kind of left open in previous movies. They do a good job of revisiting it and closing it. And also they do, you know, at the same time, they do a good job of moving forward. So the cast was huge. They had a lot, and, you know, they're all off doing different things. There were some parts where like it would go from one planet to another planet, and you're like, oh, how is that happening? But it makes sense in the end. And, you know, there's this thing like, how is Thanos in all of these places at once? But he's Thanos. He can, you know, he has ability to travel across the galaxy by snapping his fingers. So it's not like one of those things where it's like, oh, it bothers me. You know how like there when directors do jump cuts and they go from like night to day. You know, there's a couple things in it like that, but it makes sense, though. It pulls you out of that moment, but it puts you right back into another moment that you're equally invested in. So it's, you know, it's not a good thing. It's not a bad thing either.
I want to ask you this. You and I loved Blade Runner 2049. It was our pick of the year for the best film of 2017. Its main criticism was that its running time maybe was just about a little bit too long. In some cases, people thought it was really too long. This movie is a comparable time frame. In fact, 2 hours, 40 minutes running time, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
So I ask you, is that a problem?
No, it clicked for me. That sounds like a critic just needing to insult something. But there wasn't any part during scenes where they were all together where it felt unnecessary, where I was like, oh, this doesn't need to be in there. It all made sense, and they did a good job of elaborating on like how Thor used to talk about where the weapons were made, and it showed like that's cool, and it shows like how the Infinity Gauntlet was made, who made it. Like that's all stuff that needed to be in there. You needed to see that for the for, you know, some of the things that took place in the film later on. You needed all that for the film to make sense.
One of the things that's also mentioned because of the time frame involved is that some critics have out there saying it's kind of an exhausting film. Were you exhausted or totally spent as far as emotionally after seeing the film, or did it invigorate you even more for seeing the next installment next year when it comes out?
See, that's tough without getting into spoiler territory.
Just general.
Okay, it kept me interested, and there's a lot of things where they did play off of audience expectations, and they're like, oh, this is going to happen. And then you're like, oh, no, that happened. And then like it ends up not being what you think it is. And then there's stuff that happens that you don't expect to happen. And you're just like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe that happened. So there's a lot of emotions going on. I don't think it ran too long, though. Like, honestly, I didn't look at my watch. I didn't wonder what time it was. You know, I got out of the movie theater before 11 o'clock, and I'd call that a pretty decent flick. I don't know what the deal is with that, but I'll have to, you know, look at some of these reviews. But no, it didn't feel too long, didn't feel too short. It felt about the right time, because that's kind of what Marvel movies have started to be, over 2 hours, sometimes barely under 3 hours.
The three main places that has been shown in the trailers are New York, Wakanda, and the outer space realm where the Guardians of the Galaxy and Thor meet up. Are these the only places that are focused on in the movie, or are there many more places that are involved?
There's a lot of different planets. There's a lot of different locales. You know, you have New York, and there's obviously, you saw in the trailers, you have Thanos' planet, and you get to see a little bit of Gamora's backstory and where she's from, and you get to see the place where the dwarves forged the weapons of Asgard. You get to go places. You definitely get to go places. And it's, you know, like I said, that when they jump between all these different places, it's like there's those jump cuts, but then it's like when you, how am I trying to describe this game? Like Game of Thrones, when you read a Game of Thrones novel, every character has a story arc. And once the chapter's over, you go to another character, but then three or four chapters down the line, you jump back into that character's story arc. That's what it is. But except it's in movie form. So even when you lose, you're like, oh no, what happens to this character? You jump back into another character arc that you're equally invested in. And they do a good job of that. And they spend just enough time in each of these locales to basically make something cool happen.
Now, when it comes to as far as the relationships between some of the new characters, did you enjoy as far as all the new combinations that you ended up seeing on film? Or was there any ones in particular that stood out that were kind of awkward and really just didn't go over very well? Or did it, as a individual who follows the comic book scene, even still to this day, is it still something exciting when you saw all these different pair-ups than even people who read comic books actually were used to seeing?
It was cool seeing them all together, but it wasn't as cool as seeing how they came together and how, like, I'm not going to say anything, but just like how they just like freakishly run into each other and just the shenanigans that happens from that. All the characters coming together and seeing them like team up with each other, it was cool. Obviously, anything with Guardians of the Galaxy is going to have a little awkwardness in it, because they're just, you know, they're dumb, and they're kind of aware of the fact that a lot of them are dumb, and that's what makes them funny. But you kind of see, like, to see how some of the Avengers react to like the stupidity is pretty funny. But it, at the same time, you have to be ready for it, because it creates there's like a lot of awkward silences, but they're there on purpose.
All right, that is so far. We've got a lot to talk about again still with Josh Peterson. This is our spoiler-free review of Avengers Infinity War. If you have questions for us on Avengers Infinity War that I can relate to Josh or myself or Tyler Baker, because we're going to be breaking down even more on our next week's shows with spoilers, both Josh on the Friday show, the PCC Multiverse, and Tyler Baker and I on the Pop Culture Cosmos next week. Can actually send us questions, and we'll be glad to answer them as well. When we come back, we're going to be talking a lot more about Avengers Infinity War, his thoughts on the movie, and ultimately the question that I'm going to ask him at the end: is this the best Marvel movie of them all? This is the PCC Multiverse.
If you're tired of sifting through flea markets for rare and unique games, we can help. Retro City Games in Henderson, Nevada, only 5 minutes from the Las Vegas Strip, has all your favorite gaming staples, classics, and a wide selection of rare games with new stuff always appearing on our shelves. Come in and chat with Nicole or Doug about your love of games and watch as they help you complete your collection or find your childhood favorite. And don't forget, Retro City Games loves trade-ins. So if you have any Nintendo, Super Nintendo, Sega, Xbox, PlayStation, or even PC games, come in and visit Retro City Games today. Welcome to the new metropolis of gaming, Retro City Games. Get ready for Kitty Origins Evolutions, the latest documentary from Rob McCallum. Generously peppered with archival footage shot by the band, this film gives you an honest and brutal look at what it takes to survive in the music industry. Order the DVD, Blu-ray, and live CD triple pack that features recordings from throughout their 20-year illustrious history from RobMcCallumFilms.com. RobMcCallumFilms.com, your place for awesome stories about awesome people and films worth watching.
And we're back to close out the show. This is once again the PCC Multiverse. This is Gerald Glasser from Pop Culture Cosmos and Game Source, along with my good friend from Humanica Media and fellow host Josh Peterson. Want to thank again Rob McCallum and Jay Bartlett for stopping by and talking about their great project, Galaxy of Hope, which you can go ahead and help contribute today on Kickstarter. Josh, continuing our talk as far as Avengers Infinity War, I got to ask you, my friend, you talked about the humor as far as in the past with Thor Ragnarok and some of the other films, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, sometimes getting in the way of really what needed to be done as far as from a narrative standpoint or from a just from a total understanding of what's going on in the film. Does the humor, which I'm sure you heard plenty of in the film, does that get in the way at all as far as the actual end goal and end game is concerned, as far as what the Russos wanted to go ahead and correlate to audiences as far as the narrative is concerned?
No, because honestly, I will tell you this, the movie gets really dark and the humor just is in there to kind of make it not feel like it's full of despair. And they use the humor sparingly and they use it well. And it's the, you know, the type of thing, if you have personalities like that coming together, that's when the humor is used to kind of say like, oh, see how one group reacts to another. Or obviously in the discussing of plans, like with Star-Lord and Tony Stark. I'll be completely honest, like this movie gets really dark really fast. So it's not on a scale of like broody dark like DC, but it is really dark. So the comedy is placed in, it's not overwhelming and it's done just enough, kind of it's just typical of what the Russos do, you know, Winter Soldier and Captain America Civil War, they show Bucky and Falcon in the seat of the car. Can you move your seat up? No. It's just like little things like that to kind of keep the darkness at bay.
Avengers Infinity War, again, we're trying to break it down as best we can with Josh Peterson without going too much into spoilers territory, because I haven't even seen the film yet. I'm going to go ahead and see it by the time you listen to it, hopefully, so I can go ahead and on our Monday show, go ahead and break it down for you even more with Tyler Baker, and then again on Friday with my good friend Josh Peterson here. When it comes to Avengers Infinity War as far as Thanos, does he come across as the biggest baddie of them all? We've seen some great villains on a couple of occasions. Like I said, Robert Redford is still the best villain to me. Red Skull with Hugo Weaving did a pretty good job as well. Obviously, Michael B. Jordan as Eric Killmonger was a tremendous villain in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Marvel villains as a whole, though, have been substandard on many occasions. Both you and I have talked over the past couple years, and in fact as we did our Marvel Cinematic Universe breakdown on several episodes now over the past couple months, we've also talked about how disappointing on several occasions the Marvel villains are. Thanos has been someone who we've actually been seeing on glimpses of in end credit scenes and whatnot, and in actually involved, intertwined in some small parts in previous Marvel films. Does he come across as the Marvel villain that you're so used to seeing in the comic books, and also a Marvel villain that we were hoping that we would get as far as a big all-time baddie in the Marvel Cinematic Universe?
You don't love him, you don't hate him, but he is very unstoppable. He's terrifying and he thinks he's right, and that's kind of what makes a really bone-chilling villain. I don't know, there's tragedy in his past that drives him forward, and he's literally willing to sacrifice anything to get there, and that's what makes him so terrifying. You know, with the Infinity Gauntlet and the stones, like, he can do whatever he wants. That's what really makes you wonder, like, okay, what is going to happen to the Marvel Universe next? Because this movie really is a game changer.
And he enlists the help of a certain Black Order as far as some evil henchmen in this film that get set to do a lot of damage. Well, in theory, a lot of damage in the film. One of the things that I've seen across reviews all over seems to be consistent is that even though the heroes that we've come to know get a lot of shine and get a lot of execution and also a lot of importance and a lot of time under the sun, Thanos gets a lot of time under the sun as well. But the Black Order seems to be left out a little bit as far as explanation and as far as their involvement in the film overall. Is this something you notice, or did you get the right amount of the Black Order, or did you end up, after you watched the film, wanting to know more about the Black Order?
Honestly, no, they're not really. They don't really give a backstory on them. You just know that they've been serving Thanos for a long time, and you don't know whether it's out of fear or actual loyalty. But, you know, they're good foils, but there's not really enough curiosity pointed towards their characters to make you wonder about who they are, what happened to them, whatever. They don't really have a lot of depth. And, you know, with the exception of the girl and the old-looking dude, they don't really get a lot of dialogue. So it's not when, you know, when their part's over, you're not like, I wonder what kind of story that person has.
When their time is not on screen as far as it's going, correct?
Yeah, sorry. Like, when they're done doing their thing, like, there's not really a lot of curiosity about what happened, you know, what happened to make them want to be Thanos' servant. You know, they get some dialogue, and you're like, they're cool little set pieces. But, you know, other than that, it's not really, you don't really care. You don't come away from that wondering about them.
Would you have done more with them if you were directing it?
No, because again, like, you want to make sure each of the main characters gets their time on screen, gets their story. And by doing like little backstories like that, it makes everything else feel a lot more rushed. And this movie felt paced just right.
And that's something, like I said, going back to what we talked about previously, as far as it being on paper, a 2-hour and 40-minute film. And by some measures, some people would say that might be too long of a film. You know, there have been films, the Lord of the Rings trilogy and some of the movies there as far as extended editions and some other films that are 3 hours long that we felt are just the right amount as well. So I can totally understand it from that aspect. Were the effects, as far as seeing all the superheroes on screen, was the CGI, was the visual effects to your standard as far as from a Marvel film? Were they believable, and do they come across as something as spectacular as you have seen in the comic books?
Yeah, it was a visual feast. It all served a purpose, and it was not nearly as bad as what was in Venom. So as long as there's lower standards to see, you're going to be grateful for stuff like that. No, it was just basically, you know, Iron Man stuff looks really cool, but like, it's basically just a more perfected versions of what we've seen already. And we, having the history that the MCU does, we know what to expect from this. We know that they're going to put a lot of effort into their special effects, and there's a lot of care and craft and continuity that goes into it. So they did a really good job with that. You're probably referring to like the CG characters, and no, like, they have enough depth, but the skin colors look just real enough to make it seem like it belongs there. And that was they did a really good job with that.
So in your impression, that it really was a visual feast, it really was an overall great experience for you, and definitely something that you would recommend to audiences out there, whether or not they're a hardcore Marvel fan or whether they're just a casual audience member just wanting to check out the latest flick that's coming out and the big start basically of the summer movie season. So you say it's something that you would recommend wholeheartedly, correct?
Well, yeah, for sure. It's a spectacle, and it's a fun movie, and it's a sad movie. It has its typical Marvel openings, you know, and then it goes and goes and goes. It's an entertaining movie, and it's fun, and it doesn't require you to think about themes or anything. It's just giving you the culmination of the past 10 years of Marvel films. So it's good. I definitely recommend it. I don't know. I mean, I don't feel like I need to recommend it because this is going to get a lot of people going to see this movie. So yeah, it's watch it.
Are you throwing a review up on our site?
Yeah, probably not till next week though.
Okay, fair enough.
This is killing me to give you this, to give you my thoughts without spoiling the movie. So I'm just like trying to put roadblocks up.
Well, one spoiler I want you to go ahead and do. I'm just kidding when I say this, but it's kind of a spoiler. There is always an after credit scene when it comes to the Marvel Cinematic Universe, virtually almost. How many? I'm not asking you what type is in it. What's the content? How many after credit scenes are there? Just so everybody can get an idea, so they're not waiting extensively if it's like a mid credit scene or if it's actually the end credit scene as far as that's concerned.
There's one after credit scene and it is all the way at the end. So everyone's like getting expectant in the theater, moving to the edge of their seats when the, you know, the produced credits were done. And then they're like, oh, when the thing actually started to flow up the screen. But no, it's at the very end and it's worth it. I think it is. It kind of bridges the gap to the next movie. And at the same time, gives you a little bit of insight into some characters that you have come to know and love. So I think it's worth staying to watch it.
All right. At least that was pretty good as far as a non-spoilers thing. But I just want to make sure everybody knows whether or not to stay for the end credits, if there is an end credits, and exactly how many are there. So it is coming at the end of the actual credits. So everybody out there has to stay tuned for that. All right, my friend. It's going to come down to this. The last question I'm going to give you as far as a spoiler-free Avengers Infinity War review. You and I have already broke down our thoughts on the Marvel Cinematic Universe. They can read my thoughts on the Marvel Cinematic Universe on popculturecosmos.wordpress.com. And they know exactly my list from best to worst on that. And you've pretty much already, and I know certain terms over the course of the 2 years we've been doing this, have also verbalized a best to worst list of your favorite to non-favorite Marvel Cinematic Universe films. Where does Avengers Infinity War lie on that list? And is it your all-time favorite Marvel Cinematic Universe film?
It's my second favorite so far because I you know, nothing's ever going to top Winter Soldier for me. So I put Infinity War right underneath Winter Soldier. It has everything that I loved about all the other movies in it. So I think that's what puts it so high on the list.
And, well, actually, no, that leads into another question because I first came to know you and first kind of all got together as far as friends and colleagues as far as from the video game aspect. But one of the first things you wanted to show me was an article you wrote while you were still at National University along with me. And as far as a really great article that you wrote extensively on the Marvel Universe, but from a comic book standpoint, as someone who has been a comic book fan all of his life, someone who has enjoyed comic books for many, many years now, what are your thoughts as far as seeing this come to life, as far as those type of epic battles, the storylines and the things that you have seen for many years now come to fruition as far as on the big screen? Because I will tell you right now, I told my daughter today that this for me is one of the top five films for me that I've been so excited for. It's in the top five of anticipation for me. But I can't even express how even more excited you would be as far as that's concerned, because you are definitely a much bigger comic book fan than I. So share with us as we get ready to head on out your thoughts on just how important this is to you as a comic book fan.
I mean, honestly, the movie's still sinking in right now, but It was like all of the stuff that I've seen in the comic books, all the stuff where like the Avengers are teaming up with Spider-Man and Guardians and stuff like that, all the times that they've come together in the comic books and seeing what a spectacle that was, it was just like that. Like it was a very comic book movie. And for that, like, I am super grateful because they didn't try to make it something it's not. And they put characters together that mesh well together. And there's even characters when they come together, you're like, you know that they have a history that they have not talked about in the MCU yet, but it exists in the comic book. So it's kind of cool to see that. And you're like, oh, are they going to hint at this and that? It was really cool because, you know, back when Iron Man came out, I didn't think Iron Man was going to do that well, just because it's like, you know, we had Spider-Man before and the CG, and like Spider-Man got better over the years, but it's still questionable. So how are they going to make that with an Iron Man movie? And then, you know, they had the whole call out to the Avengers, and like this is the beginning of the end game. And like, it was a spectacle. It was everything that I wanted it to be and everything that I hoped it would be. And all the big set pieces from the comic books, they're able to bring to life without making it seem overwhelming or crowded or pointless. And everything served a purpose. And the writing was really well done. The CG looked good. The acting was good. It was the fight scenes all made sense, and they were spectacles. They're, you know, obviously you saw in the trailer where Thanos throws the planet, like that was cool. And you know, that's not even, you're not even scratching the surface of all like the cool fight scenes in this movie. So yeah, I'm stoked, man. I was stoked. I'll probably have to see it again. My inner kid was just ecstatic during this movie. But you know, and I hope that it does the same for everybody else. They've always done a good job of capturing your imagination, and I hope that this movie does that for people.
I hope it does for them as well. And so that pretty much concludes Josh's thoughts with his spoiler-free review. Well, hopefully it managed to avoid any spoilers out there for you, of Avengers Infinity War. If you have thoughts on the movie itself, we'd love to hear from you. Just go ahead and share us your thoughts, popculturecosmos@yahoo.com. Also as well, Pop Culture Cosmos, Humanica Media, and GameSource on Facebook and Twitter as well. Josh will actually not be here for our Monday show. That's going to have Tyler Baker from the Fantasy Football Pater podcast in the hot seat. We're going to be talking about the NFL draft, what happened with Infinity War, and how did it end up doing as far as worldwide over the weekend. We're also going to talk a lot more about The Walking Dead. I'm going to have an expert come on to next week's show. She is going to be talking to me on both the Monday and Friday episodes about The Walking Dead, about how season 8 ended, and also what the future may hold for the series itself. We're going to have that and a lot more. Just so excited to talk about it. Summer movie breakdown. We're going to be breaking down some of our favorite movies to watch out for as well coming up next week. Just so excited for it. Josh, you know, I'm going to miss you on Monday show, but definitely going to have you back on the Friday show as always. But as we head on out, any last thoughts?
I finished God of War, so we will talk about that at a later date. But yeah, check out, there's some reviews going to be going up here soon, so that'll be cool.
Absolutely. And I know Nintendo and Xbox also reported their numbers, but PlayStation 4 is still going strong here in the U.S., contradictory a little bit to what I had said previously. They were kind of like on its downswing. Yeah, they're still on its downswing as far as overall what they were doing maybe 2-3 years ago, but they're still very strong. They still won the month of March and maybe even the month of April with God of War coming out. So definitely looking for some more great months from PlayStation 4, but also want to check in with Josh as well on the Friday episode and talk a little bit more about Nintendo's future, Xbox One, and so much more in the video game world, because they all came out with their numbers recently. So definitely want to delve into that as well. So for Josh Peterson, this is Gerald Glassford. It's another beautiful day in paradise right here in the PCC multiverse. We thank you for listening. And here's hoping you have yourself a great day. Thank you.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.